offering a most loving pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari Shankar from the Shri Satya Sai Central Trust. We are going through the fifth discourse in the 1991 Samukos series. We've completed four. The fifth one is about the Keno Upanishad. It's one of the small but very, very profound Upanishads. Very simple, yet teaching a very important message. We are approximately midway in that discourse. We've played about three clips. We'll be continuing with that. So before we talk about what Swami said in the last couple of weeks, I'd invite Brother Hari Shankar to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Hari.
So we started with this discourse, and I think last week we could play only one clip in that discourse. And it was that part where Swami is speaking about literally the crux of Keno Upanishad, where it says that who is the seer? You know, there is a seen and there is a seer. And where do you make that distinction?
Yeah, because the roles, as Swami was saying, that right. It keeps switching.
Right.
Yeah.
And we were talking about a similarity between this and there's another work called Drig Drishya Vivekam.
Mm.
And there was a point which I was making, probably I'll reiterate that.
Yeah.
The difference between what Swami is saying here and what is said in that particular work.
Right.
There it stops with, you know, the objects, the senses, and what sees the senses is the mind, and what sees the mind is the Sakshi, and it kind of defines that Sakshi as the ultimate Brahman.
Mm.
But Swami brings in the idea of the intellect being the witness of the mind.
Mm.
And in other discourses, Swami of course says that the intellect is one more aspect of the mind.
Mm.
It doesn't have a, you know, entirely different existence of its own.
Mm.
But in many ways, it's a very interesting inclusion which Swami is making.
Mm.
Because one thing which Swami would often say is, you are at your level at which you are is defined by what you relate to.
Mm.
And Swami would often say that, you know, tell yourself that you're not an animal, that you're a man.
Mm.
And precisely what it means is you identifying with that buddhi.
Yeah.
Because that is the one which makes you stand apart from the animal kingdom.
Mm.
So it's interesting that Swami says that the mind is being witnessed by the buddhi, and the mind should be directed by the decision that is made by the buddhi.
Yeah. Because I think the way we understood that this particular phrase or this paragraph, as we called mind as the active principle which goes out into the world or is drawn by, you know, it's activated by whatever the senses perceive. So it's like the first, you know, the first level of the mind. And then comes the intellect, which, so as Swami was saying, in fact, if you remember, we related it to the concept called flow in psychology.
Right.
Right. So, at which point of time you have integrated yourself totally into what you're doing.
Mm.
Say, like a painter or an artist who's working on a painting, right? Or a singer, right? So, there are points of time when they completely lose their sense of separateness with what they are engaging in. Right.
Right.
And so that is the time when, you know, the intellect, which is a little less involved with so much with the thoughts,
right.
as is like concentrating on the work that is being done. So then, the next step, Swami actually goes beyond that, right? He says the intellect itself, in the next stage, it merges with the
Atma. Swami gives the example of the different states. The sleeping state, the deep sleep state.
Yes.
Where Swami says that this intellect is present even in the deep sleep state.
Mm.
And he says that's what makes you realize that you had a good sleep when you wake up in the morning. Unless there is something witnessing a good sleep and differentiating it from a bad sleep.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have somebody, you can't have yourself waking up and saying that I had a nice night's sleep.
Yeah.
So Swami is saying that buddhi is, he's present even in the deep sleep state.
Mm.
And Swami goes on to say that it's in the samadhi state that the buddhi is removed.
Yeah.
So the very fact that you are able to live through a samadhi state, there is something which is subtler than the buddhi itself.
Yeah. Because I can relate this to two episodes ago, we came across Swami speaking about the role of the Atma in all this. So we were that was a section where we were discussing about the senses, and then Swami talking about the prana, the life force, being the basis for all the senses. But then what is the basis for the life force itself? And Swami said that that is the Atma.
Right.
And we recall that Swami in the Upanishad Vahini. So there Swami actually says that the role of the Atma is, it is not invested in actually energizing the prana and creating all this.
Right.
He says all this happens in the light of the Atma. So at that stage it becomes so totally impersonal, right? So the witness still has a sense of an individual this thing, but the Atma is at a level where it is like completely impersonal. Right. There is no sense of separateness happening there.
Right.
That's the way I understood it.
Right. And, I mean, the more we talk about it, I'm not able to stop myself from thinking how far we are from all this experientially.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, true. I mean, it's so nice to theorize about it and say that this is what happens in samadhi, this is what happens when your buddhi is merged in the prana or whatever it is.
Correct.
But experientially it is so far away. But I think the reason why, as we mentioned the last week, the Keno Upanishad is really standing out is because it is referring to experiences that you can relate to.
Yeah.
It's talking about you seeing something, you know, you being a witness. In fact, I remember a very beautiful example which one of the thinkers would say, like you're sitting in a lounge of a airport, okay, and you have nothing to do, your flight is delayed by an hour, you're sitting there, since you have nothing to do, you're just sitting and seeing the scene in front of you, you're just seeing people come and go, and you're totally cut off from the scene in front of you, because you are as, how do I put it, you know, as detached a witness as you can be, because you have nothing to do with the scene.
No involvement.
And you have nothing to do with the time at hand, right? Because you're just whiling away the time. You're just letting time pass by doing this act of witnessing the scene in front of you. So you're saying that your mind is blemishless at this point, because you're just seeing. But the moment you have a faint recognition of one of the people walking around. You say, I recognize that person.
Yeah.
So immediately it starts pulling out memories relating to that person, or you know, whether you like or dislike that person. Those, what Swami would call as vrittis, you know, the aberrations in the mind, or you know, the waves in the mind, those start occurring.
Right.
So you say that is what happens in our everyday life. Because we are so emotionally attaching each person to, you know, some thought or some experience or some, you know, relationship. We are constantly in that state of, you know, being hit by thoughts every time, you know, I see Hari. I mean, there is a baggage in that relationship between, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I think that's why that Keno Upanishad is so beautiful, because it's constantly referring to experiences that you can understand. Even Swami's examples are, you know, like that.
Yeah. In fact, even as you're mentioning this, I do recall thinking about this, you know. So there's a, like, even the listeners could perhaps relate to this. Before we come to this program, we read up, you know, Swami's discourse. Like, it's presented to us in a, you know, in a printed form, or we have a PDF. I remember thinking the last time, that reading the discourse and we get some insights, you know, and whatever those insights are perhaps from our peripheral readings or our understanding of what we have heard from Swami before. But I must tell you that there is a huge difference when we actually listen to the discourse from Swami's own voice. And in fact, in his presence, I think it was the presence, his being when he is delivering the discourse, his being like when we were around him, that used to make the entire difference. Because I recall after every discourse of Bhagavan, we used to hang on to every word, you know, like try to sit in the front line and watch and absorb everything that Swami was saying. I remember that we would be completely different people. You know, after the discourse, when after Swami settled down and there would be a brief silence, right? In that silence, I could see that each one of us, I could perceive we were all very transformed at that moment, you know. But I think the effect was Swami's presence, right? And so it's why one more thing that occurred to me while he was speaking about that it is so difficult for us to actually experience this. Like right now we are getting this at a intellectual level, we are kind of understanding it, But Swami had enormous sympathy for this fact.
Mm.
In fact, Swami would say, you know, the reason is that you are inhabiting a human body.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, the moment you are in a deha, the dehabhimanam takes over.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I think the section which we'll be dealing with today is like Swami going into the nitty-gritties of this mm-hmm. machinery of the, you know, human mind-body system itself. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. I think probably what Swami is wanting us to appreciate is whether you are going through it experientially or not, to be aware that this is what happens to me.
Yeah.
You know, this is what is pulling me from one side to the other.
Absolutely.
Just to be aware of that. You know, I think I always say this, 70-80% of what we do in chemistry is, you know, is all symbolism. You symbolize most of your compounds. You know, you have an equation.
Mm.
You have a compound name, you have a compound this one, which has got nothing to do with the structure of the compound.
Yeah.
You know, none of us have seen the structure of the compound.
Mm.
And what we write in paper as, you know, CO2 or H2O or something has got nothing to do with actually how the compound looks.
Mm.
But we are totally aware of the idea that this is only representative.
Yes.
And that awareness is enough for us to, you know, go into so much of depth into the subject, which, you know, it's almost like an agreement of ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, this is wrong. We acknowledge it is wrong.
Yeah.
But it is helping us to understand deeper.
Correct.
And Swami is literally saying that that's what it is. Just understand that what you see is not what is.
Right.
You know, what your mind suggests is probably not what the world really is.
Yeah.
And one day, you know, you will be led to seeing it yourself, experiencing it yourself.
Yeah. In fact, I remember an analogy with the philosopher Wittgenstein gives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't remember the exact phraseology he uses, but I can give you the gist of it. So, he looks at this climb, you know, of like from one level of truth to the other.
Mm-hmm.
He likens it to like climbing the rungs of a ladder. And each time as you climb, the landscape looks like entirely different,
mm-hmm.
right? So your totally new worldview comes into being,
mm-hmm.
right, as you climb through these rungs. And he says that the rungs of the ladder are meant to be discarded. That is, you literally mm-hmm. break them away as you climb. And so he says at some point of time when you look back, the things that you used as your aid to climb,
mm-hmm.
those will look very foolish.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that all of these are meant to be used in that sense. Like as you climb, the things behind you, they look like totally irrelevant or, you know, totally false even, right? But the fact is that happens because you're climbing. And we must, as somebody said, you know, in the path of transformation, like we have Mount Everest, in the path of transformation, we are on Mount Neverest. You climb to a certain level, and then you look around and there's more to be done. so you know, you should begin to love the climb rather than the actual peak.
There's another point which Swami made, I'm not sure if it was in the clip we played last week or the one before that, where he says, you know, the body is unreal and, you know, you're not the body, you're not the senses.
Yeah.
And Swami is kind of inviting us to go within.
Mm.
But at the same time, the reality is you have a body, you have a sense.
Yeah.
So the question is, you know, how do you use it without, could we say, defiling this human birth?
Yes.
You have it, you cannot deny it. You can probably, as we said, you can convince yourself that you're not the body, you're not the senses. But nevertheless, you have a body and you have the senses. So Swami is saying that probably those who have completely transcended this in thought, word and deed, you know, they come up with this idea, okay, what do you do with the body and the senses?
Mm.
And then Swami says, the best way is, to give value to the body, you have to do what the body is meant for. You know, there is a certain purpose in any of the things. You know, if I have a mic here, this mic is slightly different from the other mics I have. So I will be utilizing this mic to its highest potential if I use it in that condition which it is made for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there might be another mic which is a boom mic which is meant for outdoor. But this might be a condenser mic which is best used in an air-conditioned room. You know, so when I use it for the purpose for which it was made, then I'm giving it, you know, the best use, and probably I'm not misusing it.
Right.
So Swami is saying that the best use to put the senses to is to put them into the path of values, to put, you know, use them for the benefit of others when it comes to the body.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's where we were last time.
Yeah.
So probably we'll go to the next clip.
Yeah.
I think this should be the the fourth clip in that discourse.
కనుకనే మొట్టమొదట మానవుడు దేహ సంబంధమైనటువంటి విషయాన్ని చక్కగా అర్థం చేసుకోవాలి.
Hence, first and foremost, man should understand clearly the matters relating to the body.
ఈ దేహము ఏమిటి?
What is this body?
మలమూత్ర దుర్గంధ మాంసరక్తములతో కూడినటువంటిదా?
Is it merely that which is made of fecal matter, urine, foul smell, flesh and blood?
అవును, మలమూత్ర దుర్గంధ మాంసరక్తములతో కూడినటువంటిది.
Yes, it is indeed made of fecal matter, urine, foul smell, flesh and blood.
కాని అందులోనే మాణిక్యమైనటువంటి ఆత్మతత్వం కూడాను ప్రకాశిస్తుంది.
But in it, that precious gem of atmic principle too shines.
మాణిక్యమైనటువంటిది మాండ్ల లోపల కాసేటువంటిది కాయలు కావు.
Precious gems are not fruits born on trees.
మట్టిలో పుట్టేటువంటివే మాణిక్యములు. అవి మృణ్మయములైనప్పటికీ చిన్మయంగా రూపొందుతాయి.
Precious gems are born in the dirt of the earth. Though they are mrinmaya, or born of earth, they are chinmaya, or sparkle with purity. In the same way, the body is mrinmaya, or made of dust, but the indwelling atma is chinmaya, or pure.
ఈ చిన్మయ తత్వాన్ని చక్కగా అర్థం చేసుకోవటమే మానవునికి ప్రధానమైనటువంటి యొక్క రహస్యము.
Man's main duty is to understand this chinmaya tattva or the principle of pure consciousness.
లేకపోతే జంతు నామ నరజన్మ దుర్లభము. ఈ నరజన్మం యొక్క దుర్లభం ఏమిటి?
It is said that of all beings, to be born as a human is a rare opportunity. What makes it so?
ఈ విలువైనటువంటి దానిని మనం గుర్తించినప్పుడే మన వాల్యూ కూడా సరైన రీతిలో గుర్తించినటువంటి వారం అవుతాం.
ఓన్లీ వెన్ వీ రికగ్నైజ్ దిస్ ఇన్వాల్యుబుల్ ఆపర్చునిటీ వీ విల్ అండర్స్టాండ్ అవర్ ఓన్ వాల్యూ.
కనుక తన ఎందుండినటువంటి యొక్క విలువైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని తాను మర్చిపోతున్నాడు.
మ్యాన్ టుడే ఇస్ ఫర్గెటింగ్ అబౌట్ ద వాల్యూ విచ్ ఇస్ ఇన్హెరెంట్ ఇన్ హిమ్.
మాణిక్యం వంటి తన యొక్క హృదయాన్ని మసిబొగ్గులు కమ్ముకుంటున్నాడు.
హీ ఇస్ బార్టరింగ్ హిస్ హార్ట్ విచ్ ఇస్ లైక్ ఎ జెమ్ ఫర్ మియర్ చార్కోల్.
కనుకనే తన యొక్క విలువను తాను గుర్తించుకోలేకపోతున్నాడు.
దాట్ ఈస్ ద రీజన్ హీఈస్ నాట్ ఏబుల్ టు రియలైజ్ హిస్ ఓన్ వాల్యూ.
మానవుని యొక్క విలువ ఏమిటంటే ఏదో కొంతవరకు ఎవరైనా ఒకరు మరణించారు యాక్సిడెంట్ లో అంటే అతనికి 5,000 రూపాయలు గవర్నమెంట్ ఇస్తుండాలి. వాడి విలువ 5,000 రూపాయల.
వాట్ ఈస్ ద వర్త్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్? వెన్ అ మ్యాన్ డైస్ ఇన్ అన్ యాక్సిడెంట్ ద గవర్నమెంట్ గివ్స్ 5,000 రూపీస్. ఈస్ హిస్ వర్త్ మియర్లీ 5,000 రూపీస్?
మానవుని యొక్క జీవితం అంతేనా?
Is that all man's life is?
ఇది కాదు విలువ.
This is not the value.
దీనికి విలువనే లేదు.
It is invaluable.
ఎంత విలువ ఇచ్చినప్పటికీ దీనికి చాలదు.
No value ascribed to it is appropriate.
అట్టి విలువలేనటువంటి యొక్క పవిత్రమైన మానవ జీవితాన్ని విలువ నిమిత్తమై మనం విలువకు దింపుతున్నాం.
Such a priceless and sacred human life, we bring down its value by ascribing a price to it.
ఒక్కొక్క సమయం నందు మనము చాలా భద్రమైనటువంటి ఇనుప పెట్టెలు తెచ్చిపెట్టుకుంటుంటాం ఇంటిలో.
సమ్టైమ్స్ వీ పర్చేస్ అ సెక్యూర్ ఐరన్ సేఫ్ అండ్ కీప్ ఇట్ ఇన్ అవర్ హోమ్స్.
ఆ ఇనుప పెట్టె వెల తక్కువే.
ద ప్రైస్ ఆఫ్ ద ఐరన్ సేఫ్ ఇస్ ప్రెటీ లో.
కానీ ఇనుప పెట్టెలో పెట్టినటువంటి నగలు విలువ చాలా అధికమైనటువంటిది.
బట్ ద వాల్యూ ఆఫ్ ద ఆర్నమెంట్స్ వీ కీప్ ఇన్సైడ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ వెరీ హై.
విలువ లేని ఇనుప పెట్టె ఈ దేహము. పెట్టెలోన నగలు పెట్టినట్టు దేహమందు దివ్య దేవుడుండెను సుమా.
దిస్ బాడీ ఇస్ లైక్ అ వాల్యూలెస్ ఐరన్ సేఫ్. లైక్ హౌ జ్యువెల్స్ ఆర్ కెప్ట్ ఇన్ ద సేఫ్, ఇన్ ద బాడీ ఇస్ ద డివైన్ లార్డ్.
ఈ దేహమనే ఇనుప పెట్టెలో దేవుడు అనేటువంటి ఒక పెద్ద విలువైన నగ ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇన్ ద ఐరన్ సేఫ్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ హ్యూమన్ బాడీ దేర్ ఇస్ అ గ్రేట్ ప్రెషియస్ జ్యువెల్ కాల్డ్ గాడ్.
ఇనుప పెట్టి కాదు విలువ ఇవ్వాల్సింది.
వీ నీడ్ టు గివ్ వాల్యూ టు దాట్ అండ్ నాట్ టు ద ఐరన్ సేఫ్.
కేవలం విలువైనటువంటి ఆభరణములు విలువైనటువంటి బంగారు పెట్టెలోనే పెడితే రెండింటికీ విలువ ఉండదు, దొంగలు దోచుకుని పోతారు.
ఇఫ్ ద వాల్యుబుల్ ఆర్నమెంట్స్ ఆర్ స్టోర్డ్ ఇన్ అ వాల్యుబుల్ గోల్డెన్ సేఫ్, బోత్ విల్ హ్యావ్ నో వాల్యూ. థీవ్స్ వుడ్ స్టీల్ ఇట్.
విలువైనటువంటి యొక్క ఈ యొక్క సుగుణములన్నింటి ధనమును విలువలేని ఇనుప పెట్టెలో పెట్టాలి.
దేర్ఫోర్ we need to store the valuable wealth of good qualities in a valueless iron safe.
Adiyas sthiti yokka rahasyam.
That is the secret of creation.
Kevalamu దేహము అనిత్యము.
ద బాడీ ఇస్ టెంపరీ,
సత్యం.
ఆత్మ ఇస్ ట్రూత్,
నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మ కేవలం అనిత్యము అశాశ్వతమైనటువంటి దేహమునందు ఇమిడి ఉంటుండాలి.
ది ఆత్మా విచ్ ఇస్ ఎటర్నల్ అండ్ రియల్ ఇస్ ప్లేస్డ్ ఇన్ ది ఎఫీమరల్ అండ్ ఫైనైట్ బాడీ.
దాని నిమిత్తమై మనము దేహమును కూడాను కాపాడుకొనవలెను.
ఫర్ ద సేక్ ఆఫ్ ది ఆత్మా వీ నీడ్ టు ప్రొటెక్ట్ ద బాడీ టూ.
అలక్ష్యం చేయరాదు.
ద బాడీ కెనాట్ బి నెగ్లెక్టెడ్.
ఎంతవరకు?
టిల్ వెన్?
సత్యాన్ని మనం గుర్తించేంత వరకు కూడాను దేహాన్ని మనం పోషించాలి, దేహాన్ని సంరక్షించుకోవాలి.
టిల్ వి రియలైజ్ ద ట్రూత్ వీ నీడ్ టు నరిష్ ద బాడీ అండ్ ప్రొటెక్ట్ ఇట్.
అంతేకాని దేహమే ప్రధానమని దేహిని విస్మరించటము ఇది సరియైనటువంటి మానవత్వమునకు అర్థం కాదు.
ఇన్స్టెడ్ కన్సిడరింగ్ బాడీ యాజ్ ఆఫ్ ప్రైమరీ ఇంపార్టెన్స్ అండ్ ఫర్గెటింగ్ ద ఇన్డ్వెలర్ ఇస్ నాట్ ద ట్రూ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్ నేచర్.
ఇది మనలో అహంకారం చేరినప్పుడు అన్నీ మనకు మరుగైపోతుంటాయి.
వెన్ ఈగో స్ప్రౌట్స్ ఇన్ అస్ వి ఫర్గెట్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్.
ప్రకాశించేటువంటి సూర్యునకు దట్టమైన మేఘములు అడ్డు వచ్చినప్పుడు సూర్యుడు కూడాను మనకు కనిపించడు.
When the effulgent sun is covered by thick clouds, even the sun becomes invisible to us.
కాని సూర్యుడు మనకు కనిపించకుండా పోయినంత మాత్రమున సూర్యుడు లేడా?
Just because we are unable to see the sun, does that mean the sun isn't there?
ఉన్నాడు, కాని మేఘములు అడ్డు రావటం చేతనే మనకు కనిపించడం లేదు.
He is very much there, but because of the clouds, we were unable to see.
అయితే ఈ మేఘములు శాశ్వతమైనట్టుగా?
Are these clouds permanent?
కాదు కాదు, passing clouds, కదిలిపోయే మేఘములు.
No, no, they are passing clouds.
మేఘములు కదిలిపోయిన తక్షణమే సూర్యుడు ప్రకాశిస్తాడు.
As soon as the clouds move away, the sun shines.
కనుకనే మానవత్వములో మన ఈ అహంకారము అభిమానం అనేటువంటి దట్టమైన మేఘములు చుట్టుకొనటం చేతనే మనకు ఆత్మతత్వం అనేటువంటిది అర్థం కాకపోతున్నది, కనిపించలేకపోతున్నది.
ఇన్ ద కేస్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్ నేచర్ Surrounded by the thick clouds of our ego and attachment, we are unable to understand the atmic principle. We are unable to perceive it.
కనిపించకపోయినంతా మాత్రమే లేదని మనం భ్రమిస్తున్నాము.
Since it is invisible to us, we are under the illusion that it doesn't exist.
దేవుడు ఎక్కడంటు దేవులాడుటయేలా, దేవుడు నీవే ఉంటున్నావు.
Why are you in search of God? You are verily God.
కనుక నీవే ఆ యొక్క స్వరూపమైపోయి నిన్ను నీవు వెతుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తున్నావు.
As you are yourself a form of God, you are in fact searching for yourself.
ఒక చిన్న ఉదాహరణము.
Here is a small example.
సర్వ పదార్థములు చూడినటువంటి ఒక స్టోర్ రూమ్ లోపై మనం వెతుకుతూ ఉంటే అన్ని పదార్థములు మనకు కనిపిస్తాయి.
If we were to go and search in a store room that has many objects, we will find all the objects.
కానీ ఒక్క పదార్థం మాత్రం మనకు కనిపించదు.
వన్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ అలోన్ వీ వుడెంట్ బి ఏబుల్ టు సీ.
ఏమిటది?
వాట్ ఇస్ దాట్?
ఏ పదార్థమును ఎవడు వెతుకుతున్నాడో వాడు మాత్రం కనిపించడు, ఇంకా అన్ని కనిపిస్తాయి.
ద పర్సన్ హూ ఇస్ సర్చింగ్ ఫర్ ది ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ ఇస్ నాట్ సీన్, ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఎల్స్ ఇస్ సీన్.
కనుక ఈ జగత్ అనేటువంటి స్టోర్ లో నువ్వు ప్రవేశించి అన్నింటినీ వెతుకుతున్నావు.
యూ హ్యావ్ ఎంటర్డ్ ఇన్ టు దిస్ స్టోర్ కాల్డ్ వరల్డ్ అండ్ యు ఆర్ సర్చింగ్ ఫర్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్.
అన్ని పదార్థములు కనిపిస్తున్నాయి.
అండ్ యూఆర్ ఏబుల్ టు సీ ఆల్ ది ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్.
కానీ నిన్ను నీవు చూడలేకపోతున్నావు.
బట్ యూఆర్ అనేబుల్ టు ఫైండ్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్.
అదే పెద్ద దోషం.
దిస్ ఇస్ అ బిగ్ మిస్టేక్.
తనను తాను గుర్తించినటువంటి వాడికి సర్వ పదార్థములు కూడా సులభంగా గుర్తించుకోగలడు. దృష్టి పదార్థముల పైన పెట్టడం చేతనే ద్రష్ట మరుగైపోతున్నాడు.
ద పర్సన్ హూ హాస్ నోన్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్ కెన్ ఈజీలీ రికగ్నైజ్ ఆల్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్. యాజ్ ద విజన్ ఇస్ డైరెక్టెడ్ టువర్డ్స్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్, the seer is invisible.
Torch light manu veskune darini nadchukuntu potuntam, kaani ee torch light darini chooputundadi kaani ninnu chooptam ledu.
Walking on the street with a torch light, you can see the road but not yourself.
Aa torch light nee vaipunu maranchukunnappudu neeku neeve kanipistavu.
Turn the torch light on yourself and you can see yourself. This is the divine vision.
Ee divya drushtini antarmukham gaavinchukunnappudu ఆనందమయమైన అమృతమయమైన అమరమయమైన యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వము మనకు చక్కగా అర్థమవుతుంది, ప్రకాశిస్తుంది.
When you turn this divine vision inward, the blissful, nectarous and immortal atmic principle will be understood and shine forth.
that was the next clip in that discourse. And for those of us who have not been in the first time we played this discourse, this is a retranslated discourse. And we had Brother Sunil from Radio Sai giving his voice for the retranslation. Coming back to the discourse which we just played. And Swami starts off just from the point we were discussing about the body being unreal. But the body, though unreal, being a very beautiful tool for you to climb to that state of reality.
Yeah.
Just like that example which you were giving of the ladder and the rungs of the ladder which need to be discarded.
Mm.
So Swami is talking of the body itself as one of those unreal tools which aid you to move higher.
Yeah. You know, I was recalling how in when I joined the institute in 2000, we were very fortunate that it started with the summer course, which was revived after a long time. And from almost the very beginning, Swami kept emphasizing like one phrase in his discourse we would hear time and again. And Swami would say, the proper study of mankind is man.
Mm.
And even as I had heard this phrase earlier and I was trying to, try and relate to what Swami was saying, and for a very long time I couldn't. And during one of those discourses, then Swami, he gave an analogy as to like why it is important to look at ourselves first. And he gave the, he gave it as a story. He said this father, in order to keep his little daughter engaged, she's a very bright girl, and he comes to her with a jigsaw puzzle, and which is supposed to be of very high difficulty level, and he gives it to her. So the puzzle is to actually, the pieces all, when you put them together, they're supposed to represent the world map.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally the father thinks that, it'll definitely take his daughter a very long time to do the, crack the puzzle. And as, he goes about his work, within 5 minutes his daughter is back having put all the pieces together, and he's stunned. He says, how did you do it? She says, father, it was nothing. I just turned it over and I saw that actually the pieces are those of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the pieces, because she's very familiar with the human body. I put the human body together. Automatically the world also came together. So Swami said, most of the time, We are engaged in the study of the world. In fact, many of us, as we grow so-called intellectually, we then try to set the world right, we set society right, and so many such activities we get into. But Swami says, in all this, you forget about looking at your own self.
Right.
In fact, Swami at some point of time even says, there is nothing wrong with the world. Srishtilo emi lopam ledu, Swami says. In fact, ni drishtilone lopam unnadi. So correct your vision and the world will correct itself. So this, what I felt was this entire, where we are dwelling on the body, like the nature of the body, and Swami is actually making us go through this, get to know yourself.
Right.
In that sense. And get to know ourselves, and in a whole different way, right? Like what I felt is, he's altering the context in which we lead our lives. So as long as we take ourselves to be the body and the mind, there is a certain way in which we live, and there are certain consequences because of that, right? But Swami is inviting us to now, alter the context and say, you are the divine energy that dwells within that body.
Right. As I was listening to this clip, point which Swami makes here, that, and of course you've heard Swami say this many times, Jantu Naam Nara Janma Durlabham.
Yeah.
Almost Swami is saying that first and foremost, realize the human birth is precious.
Mm.
Because the moment you realize that something is precious, I was just thinking of this analogy once, if we were preparing for some program. If you were to go and ask somebody who lives in a country where there is no water scarcity, let's say in a city where you have water all 24 hours through your taps, and there's never a situation where you don't have water. If you ask what is the use of water, probably he'll give you a list of 15 things you can do with water, which includes washing your car and watering the lawn and a host of other things. But the same question you posted to a person who is in an area where there's a scarcity of water. Let's go to a desert and ask, what is meant for, water meant for?
Hmm.
I think he'll give you only one answer, and it's for drinking.
Yeah.
Right? So when you realize that something is precious,
right,
you will automatically attach purpose to it more rigorously.
Yeah.
And when you don't see it as precious, then you will think of all the other things you can do with that material at hand.
Yes.
So Swami is saying, first and foremost, acknowledge that human birth is precious.
Hmm.
And once you acknowledge that, you will ask, okay, if it is precious, what am I supposed to do with it? What is the purpose of this human birth?
Yeah.
And, Swami goes on to say, and the next thing is you fix the purpose, either by your intellectual understanding or by taking the word of a guru or the scriptures.
Yes.
Somebody says that this is the purpose, you fix it. And once that is fixed, whatever you come across in life, you will only use it as a tool to head in that direction.
Mm.
It's just like, I get onto the highway. If I know my destination, it wouldn't matter to me which vehicle comes by.
Yeah.
If I've decided to hitchhike, a car comes by, I'll stop it. If an auto comes by, I'll stop it. If it's a truck, I'll stop it. Because I know where I'm getting. So whatever comes my way, I will use it to reach my destination. And that's what Swami is saying, that the body is mrinmaya, it is made of, it comes from dust, goes back to dust.
Yeah.
And your senses are like this. But the moment the destination is fixed, all that comes by, including your relationships, including your associations which come, you will only see them as means that you will use to hitchhike to get to this destination, which is your purpose.
Exactly. Even as you were saying this, I was just hoping that the listeners would pay attention to what you're saying, because I think it is very, very vital to get this point, because a lot of questions that we have, like, as devotees, as to what is appropriate in a particular situation, what should we do? Even when we talk to students, after we speak to them about the values, one of the questions that keeps coming up is like, how do I apply this in my daily life?
Right.
In other words, there are obstacles to practicing this. And what you said is very important. You have to create that purpose that you are living for.
Right.
So if for you, you have to answer the question very brutally and honestly for yourself, that what is it that I am living for? What is my life about?
Right.
What am I, what am I here in this world for? Because many of us, sometimes we, if you look at these music shows and all, and the music that is composed, and they'll say, they'll write for very high purposes. The lyrics stand for, for somebody, they'll talk about freedom, and somebody'll say, we are trying to stand for truth and honesty. But you get that, they're not actually living it.
Mm.
You don't see that happening in their daily life. So that's something they're aspiring for, perhaps, or that is something that is, in mode,
right,
so to speak. But if you have to be very clear as to, in any particular situation, do I stand for the values, or do I look for something that, in that situation, what can I gain?
Right.
What is your life about? And one thing we have to get clear at leading this kind of transformed life, leading a life from the standpoint of being that, being the Atma, right, or being the divinity, or following Swami's words, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that you will have a happy life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How many times you've heard that? The simplicity with which Swami would say it,
yes,
and the difficulty with which we would accept it.
Yeah.
I think we must have narrated it so many times in Swami's, in the program itself. A conversation between an army person from the army and Swami in Thrai Vrindavan, where there was this, Swami was talking about how we have to lead a dharmic life, whatever be the conditions we face.
Yeah.
And this person, who was I think a major or a general in the army, he said, Swami, but it doesn't work that way.
Mm.
And he said, for instance, in the army, I cannot go against the commands of my superior.
Mm.
Whatever he says, even if it is right or wrong, I have to follow it.
Yeah.
He says, no, you have to follow dharma at any time.
Hmm.
So he said, no, Swami, if I disobey my senior, I'll be charged with insubordination and, I can get court-martialed.
Yeah.
Swami said, so what? So he said, Swami, I'll lose my job. What if you lose your job?
Yeah.
He said, Swami, I'll come to the streets. And Swami was like, so what? This is dharma, you have to hold on to it.
Yeah.
From Swami's point of view, once you fix this as your priority,
yeah,
you will stick to it come what may.
Come what may. Yeah.
But if you stick to your, as Swami is saying, to feed your body and to feed the people who are related to this body as your purpose,
right,
then everything becomes a sacrificial offering in this purpose that you have set for yourself.
Yeah.
So that's why from Swami's point of view, it was so simple. You know, this is what has to be done. You have to do it at any cost.
Yeah. Because that Swami just puts us on this dichotomy. He's putting us right on this crossroads, and he's asking us this question: will your life be about survival?
Right.
Or will your life be about expressing who you truly are? And there's often that is a road not taken, right? So, because the choice has to be made frame like time after time. Like, and I think these folks, they'll keep coming again and again in your life, even when you think you have chosen, the Swami's path, and he'll still insert a new folk.
Right. In fact, whenever we talk about this, there's one incident, again an interaction between a student and Swami, where Swami asks this boy, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
So this boy, in that moment of emotional outburst, he says, Swami, I'm ready to die for you.
Mm.
And Swami said, no, it's not about dying for me, it's about living for me. Okay, and it was a very short conversation, but it was so profound, because dying for Swami is a one moment's choice.
Wonderful.
But living for Swami is like every minute, you make a choice, there is a option in front of you, you have to choose Swami at every turn in your life.
Right.
And that's what Swami wants. It is not about making one decision, like for us to become a student or to become a staff or to become a devotee of Swami.
Yeah.
It is not a moment's, this one. That's why Swami would often use this word, and in fact, even in all spiritual literature, it is there, where they say you lead a purposeful life, where your purpose percolates into every moment. Every moment, every decision reflects what you've fixed as the purpose of your life.
Yeah.
I think that's why, as you said, it's every moment's choice. It doesn't happen as a one-off situation.
Yeah. No, and in fact, in one sense, you really have to let Swami lead your life.
Right.
Just as you were mentioning this conversation, I was recalling a conversation which another student had with Swami. And Swami was looking at him very intently. And this was in the Trayi Hall. And then Swami suddenly asked him, will you give me your life?
Mm-hmm.
Swami held out his hand. And this student, he started stretching out his hand to, symbolically say, Swami, I am handing over my life to you.
Mm-hmm.
And even as his hand was about to clasp Swami, Swami withdrew his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, is your life yours to give it to me? Your life is already in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So very, he says that was such a profound moment for him, mm-hmm. So, to be just aware of that, most of the time, if we can understand that Swami, who he truly is, he is that divine principle that is already within us.
Right.
Right. And he is speaking now from that standpoint. He says, I am already running your life.
Mm.
Now the question is whether we are aware of that. Right. So, imagine that the driver of the car suddenly finds that the car, instead of following his steering, is now, it's got a life of its own. I don't know if the self-driving cars will have such, anomalies in their programming. But
then coming back to the next part where Swami is talking about this beautiful analogy, I think this was again in the 1990 Sambhuko series also, where the body is described as this valueless safe.
Yeah.
And what is contained in it is the precious one, and how the very fact that what is contained inside is precious,
right,
gives the body the importance. The body, though valueless otherwise, gets value because of what it contains.
Correct.
Just reminded of talking about Vrindavan, the old Vrindavan bungalow, the old bungalow of Vrindavan.
Mm.
There Swami had bought it from a person who had held that property earlier.
Mm.
And those days, there used to be a safe room in old bungalow.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami had converted it into one of the interview rooms. So many of our old students would narrate stories which happened in that safe room.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was a very tiny room, there was a huge safe, and there would be a small space for Swami to have a chair, and probably just enough space for a few boys to sit, three or four.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like an inner interview room.
Mm-hmm.
So, very precious memories there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm bringing it up is, that safe room, which was a very common feature in bungalows in the past, how they would be made. The first, the safe would be erected in a particular place. you know, okay, after the foundation, everything is laid.
Right.
Because the safe is so huge, and because it's going to, those days there are no banks. You have to put all your money and your jewels in
right,
your safe room.
Right.
So they would put a safe there, they would install it, and they will build the bungalow and the room around the safe.
Okay.
Right? So though your safe is, valueless,
right,
so much of importance is given to that, literally your room and your house is coming around it. But just because you're going to hold something which is valuable inside.
Yeah.
And that's what Swami is saying, you know, the two points that Swami is making here, or rather three. First of all, the body is valueless, but it contains something which is valuable. And because it contains something which is valuable, the body has to be given importance. You know, the three points that Swami is making, I think it's very important, because most of us, we really get this wrong. Like, you know, I think in the 1990 series, Swami makes a beautiful point. He says, you know, if you want to kill the snake, there is no point in beating the anthill.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know, this is the thing which we always get into, thinking that, you know, for the, we used to have this statement in hostel.
Yeah.
For the soul to progress, the body has to suffer.
Right.
You know, we almost have this in our mind.
Correct. Right? Deprivation. Yeah.
Right.
No, I, in fact, you know, recall Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. He was admonishing one of his younger devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, he had the same concept called that I have to neglect the body. Like, since I'm not the body in any case, I'm going to neglect the body in order to attain that enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he reminds him of, you know, or puts him back on the correct path by saying that the next time I don't see you, you know, cleaning your tongue after you're brushing, I'm not going to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he makes it, so it's, you have to pay attention to the very, very small things, you know, like, and the reason, like, I can, you know, when I read that, it was so very clear that as far as Ramakrishna Paramahamsa is concerned, we are already that divine principle. And he's not concerned with, you know, we have to get to that divine principle. He's saying we are already that divine principle. So now look where you are.
Mm.
Now you are in a body, right now. Like, I'm not concerned about the past, not about the future. Right now you are in a body. Right, and so being the person that you are, you have to maintain that body. It's been given to you, as Swami says, it's given to you for a particular, very holy, very sacred purpose. Right, and you should make every effort in order to maintain it.
And the other thing, you know, with especially this kind of deprivation of the body, or what you call self-abnegation, the thing is, see, let us say that I am a holy person.
Yeah.
I will not inflict pain on anybody else's body, will I?
Yeah.
You know, I will not come and harm your body.
Yeah.
Then where is this question of harming your body unless you think that this is mine?
Yeah.
You know, without your knowledge, you're bringing in what Swami calls is, you know, mamakaram.
Correct.
That this is mine. Unless you consider your body as mine, you will not put it through any difficulty.
Mm.
Just like how you will not put through anybody else's body through pain. Because
right,
that becomes, I mean, without, we know it, we acknowledge the fact that goodness means I don't harm anybody.
Mm.
Then when you say that this body I can ignore, which means you are, without your knowledge, you're acknowledging that this is my body, I can do whatever I want with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what it is, you know, when you say that this body has been given for a purpose, you treat it like it's another body, and it has to be, and in fact, when we were talking about, Swami was talking about ahimsa in one of the discourses, where Swami says that, you know, the next level of ahimsa is ahimsa towards your own body.
Yeah.
Because you don't consider it as my body and I can do what I want to do with it.
True.
You treat it like it's a body and it has to be respected.
Mm.
You know, that, I think that's a wisdom which Swami has always reiterated, and in fact, that's why Swami would tell his boys, he doesn't approve of, you know, this kind of fast and depriving the body of sleep and comfort.
Yeah.
Don't become a slave to the, you know, desires and cravings of the body, but at the same time, you know, don't treat your body like, you know, it's mine and I can do whatever I want with it.
True.
Right.
In fact, you know, coming to this purpose of, like, I think a few episodes back, like a few weeks back when we were talking, I was recalling how, you know, there was this person, a professor in our institute, a visiting professor, who helped us from Swami's discourse to glean, like, what is the mission, like, of the hospital, like, what does it stand for.
Okay.
And even as we were going through, the basis was all Swami's discourses, which he had given to the doctors or in the, you know, to the public, but on healthcare. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when this professor, he was going through all, doing that word filtering and all that, he discovered like what is it that Swami wanted people to be healthy for. Like, you know, when you aspire for a healthy body, and he was looking at why. Why does Swami want the body to be healthy? And he said the purpose was that Swami said that the body has to be healthy in order to serve others. You know, that is the main reason why you should. So that paropakartham idam shariram. And Swami said you maintain the body, so that's why your health should be that important to you. It should matter to you because it is the vehicle through which you serve, you know, your fellow beings.
Right.
And it is therefore the vehicle for your own self-realization.
I think in the first discourse of the series, Swami said that. You know, first and foremost, if you want to step into a spiritual life, you should not be dependent on others. You know, you should not come to a state where you need the service of others to keep yourself, you know, healthy. So for that, start keeping yourself healthy. And as you said, you know, the next thing is you can't stop with just taking care of yourself. You should be able to be of use to those around.
Yes.
So I think, do we have time for the next one? I think we'll play another clip.
Yeah.
Or of course, if you have anything more to add to this, we'll.
Nothing much really, but as with this analogy that Swami was bringing up towards the end of that clip, that the effulgent sun is covered by the thick clouds and the sun becomes invisible. These reminded me of that paragraph in the Ishavasya Upanishad.
Okay.
Like the Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pahitam Mukham Tatvam Pushana Pavrana Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye. So there also like the our true being, the truth that we are, it is likened to like a disc of gold, like an orb of gold.
Okay.
Like verily the sun, which is then masked by the clouds. And the prayer is to, you know, so that the clouds part, so that you can actually see the truth for what it is. Right? So, as it is so evocative, that whole.
I think you know, that's the beauty of, be it the Upanishads or, you know, for me, I have no idea of the Upanishads. I can only talk about Swami's discourses. But many times, many of these analogies that Swami would give, it would be like, the feeling you would get is, Swami, I've seen it all my life. Not that I lived many years before that. But that idea that, oh, we've been seeing all this. When Swami would say that, you know, things like this, the cloud covers the sun. The sun is out of your sight, but the sun is still there. You know, you are divine. It's out of your sight, but it doesn't mean that the divinity within isn't present.
Correct.
So when Swami puts it in an analogy like that, you feel like, oh my God. I mean, it's so simple to understand. You know, especially when Swami would say that, this is my handkerchief, and he would drop it and say, I'm separate from my handkerchief. So when I say, this is my body, am I not separate from my body? The first time I heard it, I said, my God, this is like, you know, it can't get simpler than this. I think that is what, you know, this Upanishad is about, and in fact, all of Swami's teaching is about. And this other example of Swami gives, you know, you go into a storeroom looking for something. And, you know, you can find everything else, but you can't find yourself.
That's a beautiful.
And the other beautiful Chinnakatha which Swami would say, about the 10 fools who get onto a boat to cross the river. So they get into this boat, go to the other side, and then they say that, have we all reached safely? You know, let's just take a head count. So the first chap counts and he says, hey, we're only 9 of us here. Like, you know, someone's fallen off the boat. So each one of those people count the other 9 in the group, you know, counting himself out, and say that we've lost one person. Until a wise man comes by and he says that all of you are there. How simple it is. I'm saying that you're looking at everybody around, you're not counting yourself. No, you're not searching where you need to search. Like the other Chinnakatha which Swami would say that, you know, there is that old man who comes and searches for a needle. And somebody comes and says, what are you looking for? He says, I'm searching for a needle. And he says, where did you drop the needle? He said, no, I dropped the needle inside the hut, but it's too dark there, so I thought I'll come and search here because it's more bright here. You know, and Swami would say that you have to search where, you know, where you've lost it, where it can be found. And all of these, so many beautiful analogies which Swami would give, it would not alienate spirituality from you, but it would really make you feel that, I mean, it's there in my daily experience. You know, even though it's based on analogies, it makes you feel like, you know, it's right in front of you. It's there for the taking.
You want to continue with another discourse, or would
think,
you like to?
I think we'll have to. It'll be too much to take another clip in that, because I'll have another 10 minutes for that, and then. Then Swami goes on to say the other analogy which Swami gives is about the torchlight again. That reminds me of an analogy which one of my school teachers would say. You know, this was probably a moral science teacher who was talking to 8th standard children,
right.
And of course the context in which she says it is quite different. And that reminds me of something which we were discussing this morning too. You know, she says that in the olden days they would have these havaldars who would go on these night patrol. So there were no like electric torches and all that, so they would have this lantern which was fashioned into a, you know, torch. They would have this lantern covered on all three sides with a cardboard. So it would become like a focus light.
Okay.
So they would go around like that, and she would say that if she, if you're lying on the pavement or something, the havaldar will come and flash that light on your face. The havaldar will be able to see you, but you will not be able to see the havaldar. So she would say that, you know, that's the same with God.
Right.
God sees all of us.
Yeah.
God knows everything about all of us. But if we want to know God, there's only one way. The man in the pavement will have to ask the havaldar to show himself, and that havaldar will have to turn the lantern towards himself.
Oh.
So she would say that that's how you reveal God. And why I'm saying is, it reminds me of what we were speaking this morning. One of the discourses Swami says that, you know, that you can make all efforts, and all your efforts will only be till the realm of Vishishta Dvaita, where you're only progressing towards God. But the true Advaita can only be got by God's grace.
Yes.
That He gives that knowledge of God.
Yeah, which is why Swami is to, I think, place so much emphasis on the Gayatri Mantra, because ultimately that is a prayer, no? Dhiyoyona Prachodaya. Right. You grant me. That's a very clear sign. Grant me the intellect which illumines. Right. So, the, even as you were saying this, again, I'm reminded of the theme of the first, of the 2000 summer course, the summer course that was held in the year 2000. And the theme was educare. And Swami kept emphasizing that all these values are latent in you.
Right.
To speak about it another way, Swami would say, you know, sometimes he would say, why are you able to recognize bad in somebody? It's because, you know, you have that a little small element of that bad in yourself. And in very much the same way, I think we respond to some of these ideas because that truth too is inherent, you know. Like, we have done our best to, you know, mask it, but it happens to break through. Like, I recall, you know, many times we read a great master, we read Swami's teachings, or we read about his life. Somewhere something resonates, you know, it's just like a bell, you know.
Right.
It rings true. Right, as human beings, maybe we don't have that experience, but deep in somewhere it is there. And Swami says that is educare. The whole purpose of listening to Bhagavan's teachings, of living through, you know, his the practices that he has initiated, is essentially to bring that out. It's latent inside.
Right. I think that's where the idea of you know, what Swami started off the discourse with, values and morality, comes. As you're saying, we all resonate to it, but somewhere I think we get back to our being our own selves.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that inhibition which has to be got over.
Yeah.
The ability to stick to these values, which Swami would say comes from within.
Correct.
Just hold on that little bit to, I think that's where we all fall short.
Yeah, because I think essentially the theme would of this whole thing, I think we can take away, is that the fork, you know, the idea of the fork, the fork between survival and the expression of your truth, the expression of your reality, no one else's, right? So, I think that choice that we have to continually make, you know, from time to time, and we will be confronted with all sorts of situations, very mundane situations, which could be like, you know, you've done something wrong and somebody comes and confronts you with your mistake, and how, you know, immediately try to cover it up. We try to place the blame on someone else. These are choices, as I said, that have to be made in pretty mundane situations, right? Not in your meditation, you know, not during a talk when you're giving to these things. But these are there, you know, that happen day to day. Somebody said it is like very easy to be transformed at your altar when you're alone or in the bathroom. You're totally enlightened. But out there in the world is where you have to, you know, demonstrate that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you keep your eyes fixed on the purpose, as we were discussing,
correct,
you will see this as opportunities, you know. You literally will be waiting for a chance when you can challenge yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's what let's say somebody who takes to chess or some sportsman, they will look to challenge themselves.
Correct.
They would not be happy with reaching the pinnacle or being the winner.
Yeah.
I think that's what differentiates a real champion.
Yeah.
They would want a kind of a good challenging opposition. Wimbledon is coming up. You'd always see that. You know, the person who wins, the satisfaction that comes when you overcome a good opponent,
yeah,
or even if you lose.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, here was a good opponent who showed me my flaws.
Absolutely.
So I'm happy for that. I think that attitude of challenging ourselves,
yeah,
to see an opportunity which comes, as you're saying, if we can confront and say that, yes, I did a mistake.
Yeah.
There is a lot of satisfaction to be taken at the end of it, really.
Correct.
If
because
we have the courage to go and do that.
Yeah, because if all you wanted to be is to be happy, you might as well play, you know, ping pong with a 4-year-old kid and you're one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So again, successfully, Hari, we've managed to play only one clip this time. Hopefully next week, dear listeners, we'll play more of Swami and we'll do less of talking ourselves. With that, dear listeners, we'll conclude this week's episode. We offer this effort of ours with humility at Swami's lotus feet. Thank you for being with us. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of today, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Do join us again next week. Till then, happy listening.